This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Timeless Design, Beyond Decorating Trends, and the author is Sharon Kroll, and Sharon joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Sharon.
Hello, Steve. Nice to be talking to you.
Well, good to have you with us. We're going to talk about principles of decorating, not just what the trends are, and you're going to explain to us exactly what that means. You say this about your book, Timeless Design, Beyond Decorating Trends, is the book for anyone who wants to make their home their own. Not what marketing dictates. It is for those who want a home that is not trendy, but timeless. Well, I like that, timeless. That puts a whole different perspective on design for a home. Now, tell us about your background and how you got involved in this very interesting profession and why you wrote your book.
Well, I'll go way back to the beginning. When I was in junior high, I used to draw floor plans for the fun of it. And I didn't do them to scale. I just drew out a room from a bird's eye view and place furniture in it. And I used to cut out room pictures from design magazines, and I put together my own notebook. So I was always interested in it. And when I went to school, I actually got my degree in art and then a teaching credential. And at the time, there wasn't a lot of opening for teachers. So I got into adult ed. My credential was secondary. I got into adult ed and started teaching interior design. And what happened, because I was always interested in it, one of my friend's husbands was working for a school district that was desperate for an interior design teacher, and the class was starting the next week. I interviewed for it and got it. So I was literally one step ahead of the students at that point. But the design principles for art, for photography, sculpture, it doesn't matter what it is, it's all the same. Fashion design, it applies no matter where it's put. In a room interior, it's the same thing. And these principles never change. That's why they're timeless. And if you follow them, no matter what time period is or what look you're trying to do, if you follow those principles, you'll come out with a well-designed room that will last as long as you want it to. So after teaching for a while, my students kept asking me to write a book, and I really didn't have the time. I was working as an interior designer and teaching at that time, and they wanted a book because there was nothing on the market that was done the way I taught the class. And that's really what got me going to write this book. It took a number of years and having a little more time to do it. And even with that, it took about a year before I finally got it done. But it was their urging that made me want to write the book. And I knew there were other people out there that could benefit from it as well.
Well, I think we all understand that there are more than one way to design a home, and the possibilities are literally endless. And it really comes down to people's personalities.
That's right. People like things, you know, one person loves one color, somebody else will hate that color and like something else. And their personalities are all different. And when you go with what you see out there in the marketplace, it's all a very similar look. It doesn't matter what store you go to, it's all basically the same thing. And it takes the individuality away from the person's room. You know, I tell them how to put themselves into it, decide what it is they like, how to use those principles to create the look they want and say something about them rather than that cookie cutter look you see in the stores.
And you'll often hear people say, well, that look is coming back.
And it does. The funny thing is, as soon as something reaches 100 years old, it's an antique, and then the status changes. It's an antique, so it's okay. Just because something was done 30 years ago doesn't mean it's bad. There was a lot of bad design in every time period. You just have to recognize what part is bad and what part is good. Because it's old doesn't make it bad. And it doesn't have a shelf life. Suddenly it's no good anymore and you have to get rid of it. That's all marketing to sell more product. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. And if you like the current trend, there's nothing wrong in using it. But I want to give people the option to do what they want and make their home their own.
So there's no right or wrong color scheme or design style, just good or bad design?
Correct. Colors come and go. I just went to a seminar talking about the new trends, and it's like, well, you know, a few years ago, that was popular. Then it fell out of popularity. Now it's back again. So there's nothing wrong. It's just how you put the colors together. There are no colors that you cannot put together as long as you keep them in the correct category. And that's what I show examples for each category in my book. Everything I talk about has a color picture of a room interior I've done that illustrates the point. So as long as you stay within the right category, you can mix any color together you want. And you just decide what category you like. And it's the same with decorating styles. I've really narrowed it down to the different design principles and how they go together to create decorating styles. And I have 12 categories and a picture to go with each one so people can look at the pictures, look at the description, and decide that's basically what I like. And now I know the elements that go together to create that look. So there's nothing wrong with any time period, any design style. It's how it's got put together. And by using these design principles, you can have good design every time.
So we start off with color. You spend, looks like, a good amount of space in your book on color, as you say, with photos, illustrations. Tell us about how color works together for the overall design.
Well, color really is the thing that's going to catch your eye more than anything in the room. Color is going to have the biggest impact of any design element in the room. So choosing your colors is very important, and there's different ways you can do it. I have the different categories. You have neutrals, saturated color, which are, you know, brighter colors, tints, which are lighter colors, shades, which are darker colors, and muted colors, which can be any of those that have been kind of dirtied, where the color is intense. And when you pick from one of those categories, you look at the whole color chart, and it's the same chart, it's just the colors appear a little differently. And then you can pick any colors you want. You usually have 3 to 5 colors in a color scheme. One color will be dominant. It's in the largest quantity. And this, what I'm going to say now, applies for all parts of design. You never want 100% of anything. You never want 50-50. You need a focal point that your eye is going to connect to. You don't want it bouncing back and forth between, say, you have two colors, red and blue, in equal quantity in the room. Your eye won't have anywhere to focus. It's just going to bounce back and forth. You have one dominant color. Your eye starts there. Then you'll have one or two secondary colors. It's used in a smaller quantity, and one or two accent colors. The accent colors are generally in accessories and maybe the minor color in a pattern, fabric or wallpaper, and they will be used in a smaller quantity. So at that point, if you want to change color categories and take something from one of the other categories, you can do that with accents, but not with the other. You can only do it because it's used in such a small quantity. It's used for punch. It's used to kind of give you a little more interest in the room. And so it's okay to switch categories, but as long as you stay with the categories for everything else, you're fine. And in the accents, you don't have to jump color category. You can stay right there as well.
Well, I see in Chapter 2, titled Design Elements, you have line, texture, balance, space, and form. It sounds like an art class.
It basically is, because those principles apply to art, they apply to photography, fashion design. It doesn't matter. It's the same principles that apply to all parts of design as well as interior design. And if you start looking at a room and you are aware of these design elements, they're going to jump out at you. You will see the room differently. When I taught classes, my students would come back and say, I didn't know what was wrong with my room. Now I do. They'd say, I walked in my room and I knew there was something wrong. I couldn't put my finger on it. As soon as I had that lesson, I could see what it was in the room that was wrong, because now you're aware of it, you see it, you know what needs to be changed to make it work.
So the room becomes like a picture.
Yes, and just like a painting, you can't just, say, paint a seascape and all of a sudden decide, well, I'm going to put a barn in it with an owl and, a cow that's being milked by a milkmaid, along with surfers coming out of the ocean on their surfboards. It's just not going to work unless you're doing something surrealistic. And it's the same thing with your room. You don't randomly just throw pieces of furniture or color or accessories in the room. You need a plan where you could put it all together, where all the elements are going to work and balance with each other.
Well, I think the key here is, like you say, this balance. And I can see in my mind's eye, I can see a room like a picture, like a portrait, some kind of, like you say, a seascape or something, landscape. But there's always a focal point.
Yes, there's always a focal point. When you walk in the room, you need, just as in a painting, there's always going to be something in that painting that attracts your eye first. The same with a room. You walk in, your eye locks in on the focal point, it travels around the room and comes back to the focal point. It can pause along the way because there are other things of interest, but none of them should outshine the focal point. And that way your eye moves around the room without any jarring stops. As soon as you have a strong visual break, that breaks the flow of the room. It will visually reduce the size of the room and disconnect the design. So the focal point and a smooth flow around the room are very important.
And again, we want to emphasize, at least you emphasize, that if the decorating trends of the day is what you love, then do it.
Oh, yes. It's all about making yourself and your family feel good. It's not to keep up with the Joneses, we hope. And if the current trend is what you love, go ahead. Definitely use it. The only thing I would suggest is maybe not take every last detail of that trend and put it in the room. Kind of mix it up a little bit so that it isn't so locked in on a time period that you'll look back at a few years and say, well, I love the room, but, you know, that kind of looks dated. You might get tired of it more quickly. If it's too exactly the way they're showing it in the current trend, and by mixing in a little bit of your personality and a little bit of something about the family in the room, we'll keep it more personal and something that makes it more enjoyable for a much longer period of time.
So the purpose of interior design, as you state, is to create a home that is functional, beautiful, and adds to your happiness.
Yes, exactly. I have some clients that until their home is put together, they can't relax. I seem in my own home to always be in turmoil and changing something, but I guess my focus is out there working with other people, so I pull away from that. But most people like a certain atmosphere in the room, a certain feel. They like their home to work the way they want it to, and that's what interior design is for.
So it's not about color schemes or decorating style.
Well, it is in that you pick the color scheme you like, you pick the decorating style you like, and you put it in your room. But it's not
some specific,
necessarily what the marketing is telling you to do.
What you see in a magazine.
Right. It might be what you see in a magazine, but it doesn't have to be. Just because that's what the current trend is, and if it's not what you like, that means you don't have to do it. You can do whatever you want, and it will remain timeless if it's done using good design principles.
And you call these basic design principles simple.
Yes, because I break them down to the simplest way of presenting them and how they actually work in a room, and give an example to show you how that works, so that it's not just theory, it's actual application of the principle.
All with specific photographs that show an example of different components and elements of that design.
Yes, that's exactly right.
The title of the book, Timeless Design Beyond Decorating Trends, and the author is Sharon Kroll. Sharon, tell us how to get your book.
Well, several ways. You can go to my website, which is www.kroll, K-R-O-L-L, interiordesign.freeservers, freeservers.com, or you can go to the Balboa Press website, and they have a bookstore there, or I'm on Amazon and Barnes & Noble as well.
Thanks for being with us, Sharon, on Indie Book Publishing, and this interview brought to everyone by Balboa Press. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on TogiNet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, LaBellaVitaCosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central, on TogiNet.com.
Mark Lipinski is coming to TogiNet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Words Hit Hard as a Fist, with 18 tips on how to stop being bullied. And the author is Charisse Rudolph, the leadership lady. And Charisse joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Charisse.
Hi, how are you doing this morning?
Well, these 18 tips are critical. So much of this goes on, much not ever being said. Teenagers come home literally in terror, and unfortunately, some take drastic action and results in suicide. So a much-needed book. And we'll get into the details. But first, just let me share a few things that you've written about your book. You say school shouldn't be a death sentence. Bullying has become an epidemic. There's been a lot of talk, but no instruction on what to do. Now there is. Words hit hard as a fist. With 18 tips on how to stop being bullied, a book written with strategies for teens. What was the drive here, Charisse, to publish this? Obviously, much needed, but again, publishing a book is a huge effort. Why did you go there? And tell us about your background as well.
I started writing this book, actually, in 2009, and then we moved, and I was unable to complete it. And after we moved here to the town of Tehachapi, I was just about finished with the book, and a young man by the name of Seth Walsh committed suicide. Now, I felt pretty hopeless, like I had failed. Here, I was sitting here in my office writing this book, and there was a little guy down a couple miles away, and he just took his life for the same reason that I'm writing the book. You know, I started looking into it more, and actually in 2010, there were 11 kids who had taken their lives. And I needed to get this book out. Part of the reason that I wrote this book is that kids were killing themselves, and I knew the answers to what needed to be done in order for kids to understand how to cope. Of course, we know that middle school and high school is a really hard time because your identity is in question. You know, you don't know exactly who you are. So you pick on other kids because you want everybody to know that you're not like that this week. As far as my background, I started off with learning disabilities. I had low self-esteem, and I decided that I wanted to not be like my parents, to be honest and truthful. I wanted to be able to cope with things better. And I took lots of classes, and then I started my own company, Outdoor Learning Adventures, in about 1992. And we did team building for teenagers, and we worked with a lot of Fortune 500 companies as well. And we did that for about 10 years, and then I decided that I would start using our horses. And I was certified with a GALA in equine-assisted psychotherapy, and that's where I won the Leadership Award in 2002 for leadership contribution to women. And from there, I did programs with other people, and then I decided a few years later that I would write a book, and I would just write my stuff down. So that's my experience. Now, since then, I've held a forum on the Ellen DeGeneres website, and I had a forum that was called What Can You Do to Be Part of the Solution for Kids Who Are Bullied? And I had people write in, and I would give them information. I write a column in our local newspaper, and I'm trying to get a radio show going, actually, on your station. I'm looking for sponsors right now so I can get that
Fantastic.
Going.
Great.
Yeah, that would be really great. So I'm just trying to do whatever I can to let kids know that, you know, there's ways of getting around it. Now, I just wrote a magazine article for, it's called Radius Magazine, a couple days ago. One of the things I said in that was you have to almost think of it as a mind game. And they're trying to take away your personal power, you know, the bullies. And what you want to do is you want to try and outwit them. So that's what I'm all about.
Well, you say there's 160,000 kids. They don't go to school every day because they live in fear of being bullied.
Right.
That's a huge figure.
It's a huge figure. I mean, and if you think of it as at the economy level, you know, the school's not having money. Just think, if kids were not fearful and they were going to school and all showing up, the schools get paid each day for each student in school in the public schools. Just think of the money they would have in their pockets for a better school system if all these kids weren't missing school every day. I mean, that's a huge amount.
Part one of your book focuses on 24 teen challenges. Now, let's just talk about a couple of those, the ones that kind of stand out as maybe being some of the greatest challenges.
All right. Which ones do you want to talk about?
Well, just you pick a couple.
Well, weight is always something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're not the perfect Barbie doll size person, you know, you get picked on. So that's a real easy one.
Right.
You know, just as girls and boys are developing and stuff, there's a lot of teasing going on with that. You know, some develop before others, and some feel bad about it. And it's mainly the feeling bad about it on any of these issues. It's mainly the self-esteem or the confidence that a child has.
Got to fit in. You got to be cool.
Yep. And you can be, you know, you can be popular one day, and the next day, you know, you can be non-popular. And just like when I talk about bullying or I give a presentation, it's really the bully, the bystander, and the person being bullied. So it's the bully, bullied, and bystander. That's how I say it. And with the bully, bullied, and bystander, they can trade places at any time. So whether it's your family, you know, the car that they drive, sexuality, that's a huge one, of course. You know, a lot of these kids that have been killing themselves have kind of come out and said, you know, well, I'm gay. And other kids are snubbing them and making fun of them. And that's probably the largest audience right now into this whole, you know, scene that's happening with the bullying, because kids don't understand it. Their parents are ignorant, and they're not learning what they need to know about being tolerant and accepting of others.
Part two, how to thrive, 13 tips that will intercept the bully. And, of course, there's part three where there's five other tips, the tools to make it happen. Let's pick out a couple of these tips in part two. Why don't you choose a couple and share with us?
Well, I think the hula hoop theory is probably one of the best ones. The hula hoop theory has to do with if you could visualize that you have got a hula hoop around you at all times, wherever you go. If you're going to the mall, if you're going to the school, if you're going to the office, wherever it is, we all have this imaginary hula hoop as we walk around. And the hula hoop, of course, can move to the left, it can move to the right, back and forth. But if it really starts to push into us, it's kind of like uncomfortable. It would be uncomfortable. So we walk around all day, and we kind of, you know, overlap our hula hoops somewhat into each other as we're going throughout, you know, our activities. But with the hula hoop theory, when you feel that knocking into your side, that's when something needs to be said. So it's realizing that hula hoop is being pushed beyond, and that's when someone's walking over your boundaries. That's when somebody's doing something that's not quite right, and that's when you need to speak up. And a lot of times, adults even have a hard time realizing it, but kids have a really hard time if their family don't have good boundaries, and then how to go about saying what they need to say. And that would take me to the next probably really great chapter, which is how to speak without making somebody wrong. So when you do that, which is called Don't Hate, Communicate is the chapter, it's how to talk about a person's action without making the person wrong. And if you think about that for a while, it's a challenge, because most times when you say something, let's say to your brother, your sister, whoever you know, like, hey, you know, you didn't clean up your dishes. It doesn't just go clean up your dishes. You need to clean up your dishes. It's you don't clean up your dishes. And the other person says, yeah, well, you didn't do this. Yeah, well, you didn't do that. Then pretty soon it's like, yeah, well, you're stupid and you're this and you're that. And it gets into a huge fight. So it's just talking about the action of what happened and not making the person feel like there's something personally wrong with them for not completing or doing whatever it was that was done.
Okay, let's move on to then part three, where you have five tips. The tools to make it happen is the title. What are some things there that would help the person being bullied? What that person should do?
The first one, the way of the world, is creating what it is that you want in life. Creating what you want in life is by, first you ask the universe, if you believe in God, it's God, but you ask the universe, you visualize, you believe, and you have to be grateful for everything that is going right in your life. When you do that, things start to turn around the way you want. So let's say, for instance, there is someone picking on you at school, because we're talking about bullying. And let's say that person, every day you walk by and that person makes some kind of a snide comment to you. Well, there's things you need to do as far as taking action, but besides that, you need to think about what it is that you want to happen, what it is that you're working towards. You need to visualize it, you need to believe it, you need to ask the universe, and you need to align yourself and then take that action. So aligning yourself is doing all these other things and then taking the action. So, for instance, if you need to go in and talk to a counselor or something and say, like, you know, I've got this person, this girl or this guy that is threatening me, besides just going in and saying it, before you go in, you want to really visualize the outcome of what you want. And you can't give up on yourself. You've got to really believe that that is going to take place the way that you're seeing it.
So don't focus on the fear or the situation that causes you so much anxiety, but on what you want to be, the way you want to be it.
Exactly, the way you want it to be, right.
Right.
Right, so that's the most important. And that's, again, you know, the grateful part. It's kind of like, you know, is the glass half empty or half full? You want to really concentrate on the glass being half full. You know, because that's changing your energy. And the other thing that's changing your energy is the grateful part of it. Like, hey, you know, I'm here at school. I'm learning things. There are other people around that, you know, I can hang out with. Or maybe if there's someone you can hang out with, then it's just your visualization is finding somebody that can relate to you and that you can hang out with or be friends with. So it's really looking at the cup half full all the time.
Now, you have a goal and a request from our listeners.
Absolutely. You know, I'm not rich and I'm not famous yet. And I would like to get this book into every kid's hand that would like a copy. And again, remember, it's not just the kids being bullied. It's the bullied and the bystander. It's the information in this book. And I can't do it on my own. And my goal is to get at least one copy into every school library in the entire country. And the only way that can happen is if I can have people be part of my solution and part of the solution of bullying, which is to get one copy and give it to their hometown library and, you know, put on the inside, this is gifted by whoever you are for, like, you know, the price of a fast food lunch, you know, like a Jack in the Box or something, you could be saving a kid's life. So that's my request. If you want to be part of the solution to stop bullying, get one copy and get it to your hometown library.
Any other closing thoughts, Charisse?
It's just that if all of us work together, we can put a stop to this. Slander, for instance, is not allowed in the adult world. And this has to change as well for the kids' world. You know, they have to be responsible. And parents, if you can give more time to your children and find out what it is that they love about life and help them to excel in it, their confidence will build. Because it's confidence and the skills, life skills they need, that will get all three, the bully, bullied, and bystander, into a better place so they know what to do instead of what's happening.
The title of the book, Words Hit Hard as a Fist, with 18 tips on how to stop being bullied. And the author is Charisse Rudolph, the leadership lady. Charisse, tell us how to get your book.
Go to www.balboapress.com, or you can get it on Amazon, and you can also get the ebook version.
Well, this interview is brought to everyone by Balboa Press. Thank you, Charisse, for being on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to my next book and having another interview.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Want to be challenged in a powerful way to leap beyond what you think is possible? Then join us Mondays for the Leah Jansen Show, every Monday at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Central on TogiNet.com with Leah Jansen. Listen live as life coach Leah uses her coaching skills to give you the tools you need to take action and create momentum. You are encouraged to call in and share your greatest fears, challenges, and obstacles. And then listen as Leah obliterates those barriers to success. For more on Leah and the show, check out her website, leahjantzen.com. That's Leah, LEAHJANTZEN.com. Spend 1 hour with Leah, and you'll be captivated by her energy, enthusiasm, and magnetism. You'll quickly become addicted to her positive attitude and make-it-happen mentality. Ready for a life-changing, mood-altering show? Then get ready for Leah Jantzen and listen live to The Leah Jantzen Show every Monday morning at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole O'Dell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The Egg Moon, Living the Question. And the author is Vaughn Goodwin. And Vaughn joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to everyone by Balboa Press. Hello, Vaughn.
Well, good morning. How are you?
Great to have you with us. You're going to take us on quite a journey of discovery. I guess that's the best way I can describe it, personal discovery. I want to read a few things that you have written. You say this, coincidence does not exist. Divine orchestration does. And awareness of this concept increases one's consciousness. Has anything remarkable happened to you today? You also say ancient wisdom proclaims a teacher will appear when the student is prepared to learn. One is always where one needs to be exactly the moment that is required to experience opportunities in increased awareness. I guess to the casual listener, you're a deep thinker. You know, not only are you a deep thinker, you practice what you preach. Tell us about your background, Vaughn.
About 10 years ago, and of course, things happen in people's lives that become these tipping points, if you will. And about 10 years ago, I went through an experience with the death of my mother that was a result of some very unusual medical situations, if you will. And it caused me to have some anger and some questions and some things in my life that and some questions that arose that I needed answers to. And then going through the typical grieving process, that sort of thing, I was beginning to notice certain things happening in my life that were more of stepping stones to a higher level of understanding than anything else. Things happening in my life that, like a found book on the back of a Continental flight in California, a book that was left by accident, I'm sure, by a previous passenger. And I pulled the book out, and there was a post-it note on the front of the book that said, "This is your answer."
Oh, my goodness.
Just strange things like that. And, of course, the book is just just filled with incidences like that. And each time those things happened, it provided an additional level of understanding and awareness that I needed at the time to get to where I am today. Now, certainly, I'm not where I want to be or need to be and where I desire to be. I think that's a journey, and that's the living the question part of it. It's not the answers that we accumulate that defines us. It's the journey to those answers.
What's the motivation to write the book? You do a lot of business consulting. You're a coach. Why write the book?
Well, maybe if I may be so bold, motivation is a word that we often use, and I understand what you mean by that. But motivation is when someone takes an idea and a concept and makes it their own and they have a goal to reach. To me, it was more inspiration in that that concept and that idea took hold of me. It took me where I needed to go. So I think with that inspiration and came enlightenment. And enlightenment, in my definition, is a need and a desire to serve others. So in my work as a software consultant, author, as a coach, and a presenter, I first look at it not so much from a way of making a living as much as helping people get to where they want to be and need to be. And all those other things kind of fall into place as a result of me pursuing my need and desire to help people.
You quote author William James, who says, "Most people live, whether physically, intellectually, or morally, in a very restricted circle of their potential being." So we kind of hold ourselves prisoner?
I think we limit ourselves. There was a quote by Marianne Williamson that says that we don't fear our darkness, we fear our light. It's what we're capable of that scares us. And most people will sit back in an area where they feel comfortable, where they have a predictable life, if you will, and that they know that when they do certain things will happen. And they never push the envelope, if you will, but just simply being still and experiencing life and experiencing consciousness. In other words, there's a quote that I like to, I have on the dash of my car and on my mirror at home. And it's just very simple. It says, "The memory of God comes to a quiet mind." So if we just kind of stop and say, look around and say, this is where I am, and if I want to experience more, then life, this divine orchestration, will provide those steps of to get where you want to go. And that's the whole gist of it. The teacher, whomever or whatever the teacher is, comes to that quiet mind.
So is that what you mean by this statement, consciousness is thinking with awareness?
Correct. That's exactly true. And I think the belief, or the at least the understanding of the belief, that everything is happening for a purpose, not only enlightens an individual and educates them, if you will, but it also makes them happy, because now everything that you're experiencing, you know, is a direct benefit to you. And how can someone not be happy with their existence when they know that everything is making them better? Now, I know that we have some things in our life that are not desirable on the surface. We know that we have things that are, if we had any, you know, if we could do it some other way, maybe we wouldn't have these struggles and things, but they're there for a reason. I have a friend who lives here in Alabama that was the chaplain that presented the Bible to John Glenn when they pulled him from the ocean after his circling the globe. He's also this same person that presented the Bible to John Glenn was the person that taught me a very valuable lesson. During the Tet Offensive in Vietnam, he said that the rainy season there was just so horrible. He just hated his life and his existence because of the rainy season, the heat, and how uncomfortable it was there, and how the rain would roll off the tents and create large gullies around the tent. It was just muddy and horrible. But during that Tet Offensive, when the bombs and the bullets were flying, it was that gully the rain created that saved his life. So the rainfall and all that uncomfortableness and all that stuff that caused him, you know, anguish and things, ultimately saved his life. So if we look at life the same way, the rainfall in our life is much needed, and that it may provide a safe haven for us in the future.
So the adversity is there for a reason.
Well, absolutely. And if you look at it as there for a reason, it's much easier to deal with. You know, you don't have that woe is me attitude.
Yes, yes. And often people who get into that mindset, into that way of negative thinking, they can't see anything else.
Actually, they create that negative. They create their response. Ancient wisdom and modern science, ancient wisdom has told us, and modern science has actually proven it to be true, that there is a web of existence outside that's beyond most people's understanding. And that web is almost like the operating system for a computer. And the software that we run on that web is called human emotion. So if we throw negative things out there into the computer, if you will, we're going to get that negative back. We're going to get that outcome. Garbage in, garbage out. But if we have an understanding of how we work as humans, as spiritual beings in human bodies, then we know that what we throw out there will come back to us, and we understand that we can control that.
The title of the book is The Egg Moon. Now, why are your books named for the full moons?
I had a conversation with a Lakota Indian in South Dakota. I travel extensively with my work and my books and my presentations. Had this conversation with this Lakota Native American, and I asked her, in my readings I had discovered that the reference to North America is as the turtleback is prevalent. And I asked her, why is that so? She said, well, it's a sign of fertility. And I thought, how strange is that? Of all animals, I don't think of a turtle as being a sign of fertility. She smiled and went on to explain that the back of a turtle has 13 panels. The carapace of a turtle's back has 13 panels, each one representing the 13 full moons in a calendar year. Along the edge of the turtle's back are smaller 28 panels, smaller, it's 28 in number, and those represent the days in between each full moon. So as a Native American couple sitting on the prairie watching the sunset, they can time and plan their family so that the baby will be born in the spring, the time of the egg moon. And the egg moon is the time of new growth and birth and warmth, the lengthening of days, and that's the best time for a baby to be born. So actually, I wanted to use that as a theme, if you will, for the naming of my books. I have 13 outlines that I want to produce over the next few months. And I started with the Lenten moon, and of course the book we're focusing on today is the egg moon.
You also have an interesting subtitle, Living the Question, which it may not make sense to most. You know, how do you live the question?
Well, the thing is that here in the Western world, and I'm not being condemning or judgmental, but in the Western world, we have this idea that we should push a button and have an answer. We should be able to push a button and have some kind of response. And it's just the way where the culture is now. And in doing so, we have kind of separated ourselves from the experience, from living the experience. And it's the living the experience, to me, that is most important. And the living the question is more important than the answers that we gain from our questions. And in the past 10 years, using my example, not only have I come to certain conclusions and gained certain answers over time, certainly I wanted that, but I think the patience and the orchestration of how things have been presented to me as I was ready to understand it was more important than the answers themselves. I think we need to just stop flailing about in the water, muddying the water, and just be still in this busy world in which we live and let the dust settle, let the mud settle, and that's the living the question aspect that I want people to be able to do. It's just stop. Just be still and let the memory of God come to a quiet mind.
You say the purpose of this writing is to provide a listing of awakenings, and then you say it is what it is, essays of discovery. So what are these essays? This book is filled with essays?
Well, it's more of a primer, if you will. I wanted this book to be able to be read by a multitude of people and have some aspect of this book touch everybody. There are chapters in the book that are very heavy into consciousness. There are chapters in this book that relate to history, to the future. And I just wanted it to be a primer. In fact, the chapters in this book will probably and most likely be future books in this Moon series. So I just really wanted to have one place where a person could go that I didn't have when I was in my discovery, have one book or one place a person could go to kind of cover the gamut and be able to pull certain things out that a person would need. And, of course, you could read this book at night in your bed, at your bedside table, and probably three or four nights with just, you know, leisurely reading. And that way you could actually just pull certain things out you needed and pursue your own discovery.
You also talk about the importance of dreams, the role of guardian angels.
Oh, absolutely. The night before my mom was buried, I had this dream that was very, very interesting. And at the time, it was very troubling. But now I understand fully what the intent of the dream was. And it was a dream where I actually had was involved in an accident where I, in my dream, transitioned or died. And I was in this dark space. It wasn't scary. It was very comfortable. I knew in my consciousness in that dream that I was supposed to be there. And then at some point, suddenly, though, a point of light appeared, and I was drawn toward it, or it toward me, and I was sucked into that light. And as I was doing that in the dream, I knew that I was going into another existence, another life here on Earth. Now, since then, I've had thousands of dreams where actually in my I rehearse, or something has given me a script, if you will, or given me a heads up as to what's going to happen the next day in a presentation or an interview or a coaching session. I actually have those lucid dreams where I can actually see what's going to happen the next day. Now, as far as guardian angels, there's a story in the book that is very compelling that interests most everybody that I've talked to. And I was driving across northern Louisiana early in the morning, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and driving alone, and there was a hitchhiker, a lady on the side of the road, and this lady was by herself. And I attempted to stop to pick her up, to give her a ride, at least to the next exit. And as I hit my brake pedal, I had no brakes. And the car was a relatively new car, you know, operating as it should. And I hit my brakes, no brakes. So I immediately forgot her and started worrying about my own problems. And I drove to the next exit a couple of miles down and hit my brakes. And, of course, the brakes worked. At that point, it was too late to help the lady, so I drove on. A few minutes later, maybe a half hour later, a news bulletin came on the radio of where two men had stopped to pick up a lady that was hitchhiking. And when they stopped to pick her up, some other men came from the bushes alongside the road and pulled the two men from the car and shot them. One was pronounced dead on the scene. The other one survived and told the tale of what happened. So I have no doubt that my guardian angel prevented my car from stopping so that that fate would not fall on me. And I've had a number of other guardian angel stories in the book that are very similar to that.
The title of the book, The Egg Moon, Living the Question, and the author is Vaughn Goodwin. Vaughn, tell us how to get your book.
The book is available on all the usual outlets, if you will, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Balboa Press. Also, I have a website, vaughngoodwin.com. VaughnGoodwin.com, and there are links there to purchase the book as well. And, of course, I encourage people to purchase the book solely because it enlightens and it gives a primer and it gives someone an opportunity to experience things that they know in their lives that they are experiencing. And at least it would be one of those things to where if you feel like you sense there is more and you feel like what you understand is incomplete, this will help take you to the next level.
Thank you, Vaughn. Thanks for being with us on Indie Book Publishing. And this interview is brought to everyone by Balboa Press. Thank you, Vaughn.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.